So this is part two of the first chapter in Depression, The Way Out by Dr. Neil Nedley, MD. The name of the first chapter is The Marvelous, or the title is The Marvelous Mind and the Invisible Disease. So it took me about 20 minutes to read through the first six pages, and then we'll go from 6 to 11. I'm a slow reader. Sorry. All right, so anyway, page 6, Depression, a Common Mental Illness. So depression is one of the most common, dangerous, and most feared forms of mental illness, that is depression. We may not have secret fears of going crazy and falling into a psychosis where we lose touch with reality, but all of us have times when we are down or feel depressed. Yeah, that's true. Drifts in moods are a normal part of the human experience, so ups and downs. But some will have a form of depression that lingers and can have serious consequences. Such a condition is not normal. It should receive medical attention. So that is, if it lingers, it may have serious consequences. The sufferer may not be aware that medical attention is needed or may not want to admit it. A misunderstanding of depression may be one of our greatest threats. So there's a picture, illustration, which says, it's entitled Some Facts About Depression. And it says, has six bullets. So the first bullet is major depression is the most common mood disorder. Number two, it knows no cultural, social, or economic barriers. So it goes across all cultures. Number three, it is largely misunderstood. Number four, one out of three internal medicine patients has it. Wow, one out of three. Number five here, proper treatment can effectively reduce or cure it. And number six, most cases can be treated on an outpatient basis. Okay. So next heading is depression. What is it? So what is depression? How common is it? Who is susceptible to it? Can a person have it and not know it? Is there more than one kind? What kind of physician deals with it? Is it strictly psychological? Can depression be accurately diagnosed and effectively treated? Can it be cured? Is it related to lifestyle? If I get it, will I need to be on medication? And if so, will I need the medication for my whole life? This book is dedicated to those who want answers to these questions. Thank you. Some of these facts about depression are listed in Figure 5. We just went through that. A form of depression called major depression is the second most common mental illness in the United States. I didn't know that. So I think it may have taken over because it says here in the next sentence, it is second only to simple phobias such as fear of crowds or of enclosed spaces. I'll have to look that up on Google, but I think major depression is number one now, but we'll take a look. Major depression is far and away the most common mood disorder. Up to 10% of the population will suffer at least one episode in any given year. It affects rich and poor, famous and infamous, cutting through all sectors of society. Depression has been a misunderstood condition by most people. We need to understand what it is, not only because it is so prevalent today, but also because it is becoming more common year by year. I see it very frequently in my office as an internal medicine specialist. Such specialists deal with adult physical diseases of internal organs that do not require surgery, such as heart, lung, stomach, and intestinal diseases. This was and is my forte. He's talking about intestinal diseases. Actually, I think he's just talking in general about internal medicine, but he is a GI specialist as well. This was and is my forte. However, one day an article crossed my desk in one of the major specialty journals showing that, in italicized here, about one out of every three patients in an internal medicine practice have depression when it is looked for. Wow, that's powerful. Since this disease is so common in my field, I thought it was incumbent upon me to learn as much as I could about it. I not only wanted to recognize the disease, but also to be able to adequately treat my patients who are afflicted with it. I was already familiar with the many standard medicines that are effective for depression, but I desired to go far beyond just the standard diagnosis and treatment. As with any disease, there has to be a cause. There has to be a cause. So there has to be a cause, as with any disease, has to be a cause. I had been carefully taught by the esteemed and now late Albert Brust, B-R-U-S-T, M-D, never to simply label someone with the disease of, for example, congestive heart failure. It was mandatory that I find the underlying cause of the congestive heart failure. Was it a valve or electrical problem of the heart, or could it be coronary artery disease, which is the most common cause, or even a primary heart muscle problem? It could be a hormonal problem stemming from elsewhere, but having its effect on the heart. It was imperative that I find the answers. Why? So that I could treat the patient most effectively. But isn't the treatment for congestive heart failure the same regardless of the cause? Yes and no. Some of the standard treatments are the same regardless of the cause, such as a low-sodium diet and diuretic medication. But if the best treatment regimen is to be found, the cause needs to be established. Furthermore, depending on the cause, a cure may be possible such that the patient in due course may not need to be on any medication or treatment regimen. I question whether the same reasoning was valid in dealing with depression. This launched me into a study that has turned out to be highly rewarding to my patients who are victims of this disease. It has also been rewarding to those whom I have had the opportunity to reach out by way of lectures or to reach by way of lectures and seminars. The results of my study form the basis of this book. The approach I outline here is unique at this point in time, but I do not believe it will be for long for two reasons. Number one, the outcome in most of my depressed patients has been nothing short of excellent. And number two, it makes good scientific and clinical sense. And he's talking about finding the cause. And I've told some people in our group that I agree with him 100%. And I've been guilty of this as well. People come in with depression. We just document they have depression, do the guidelines, do they fit the criteria? If they do, then we treat them with an antidepressant. But we don't go through the 100 different causes and try to figure out if we can make recommendations regarding lifestyle changes, etc. Now we're doing that. Yay. All right. Since reading the Internal Medicine article on depression, becoming more aware of its signs, I see at least some elements of depression in about one out of every four of my patients. Thus, I see depressive patients on a daily basis and often many times a day. Again, this is Dr. Nedley talking. It is unfortunate that so many people who are depressed do not seek medical attention for it. For every person who comes to a doctor with this disease, there are many more who suffer from the consequences of it but do not see a physician, psychologist, or any other medical professional. Many do not seek treatment because they fail to recognize that their suffering is caused by mental distress. Next heading, depression is on the increase. Depression is increasing worldwide and is now striking at an earlier age, as listed in Figure 6. Note that major episodes of depression are now occurring frequently by the age of 25, whereas they previously occurred in individuals at about an average age of 40, the so-called midlife crisis. The risk of an individual becoming afflicted by it has also increased over time. This increased risk of depression is astonishing in light of the society in which we are living, particularly in the United States and the developed world. There is no question that we are living in an age in which more people are doing more fun things than ever before in human history. They range from amusement parks to movie theaters to sporting events and countless other forms of entertainment and amusement, not to mention the constantly running television set that is in 99% of homes in America. Yet we have ever-increasing rates of depression and sadness. Could there be a connection between seeking fun things and failure to find lasting happiness? We will explore this most interesting question in Chapter 9. So again, this connection between seeking things that are fun and their failure to find true happiness. The large number of people afflicted by this disease and the resulting costs from a clinical standpoint are huge, as shown in Figure 7. At this writing, we see that it affects 200 million people worldwide, which is one person out of 30 of the world's population. In the U.S., it will affect 19 million Americans this year, or one person out of 16. In the U.S. alone, the cost of dealing with this disease is over $70 billion per year. It approaches the amount spent on heart disease, the number one cause of death in the country. Wow. U.S. antidepressant sales have risen more than 800% to $10.2 billion since 1990. The number of people taking antidepressant medications has also steadily increased, as shown in Figure 8. We are dealing with a major disease. So going back, that figure number 6, depression is increasing. Four bullets. Number one is the number of people developing depression has increased since 1915. Number two, the disease seems to be striking at an earlier age. Number three, major episodes of depression now occur frequently by age 25. Number four, overall risk of depression has increased over time. And then figure number 7, on page 8, impact of depression, three bullets. Number one, affects 200 million people worldwide, and I think that number is higher now. Currently affects more than 19 million Americans and costs over $70 billion in treatment, disability, and lost productivity in the United States each year. Wow. All right, so next heading is what depression is not. So what depression is not. So not it's not entitled What Depression Is, it's What Depression Is Not. So some kinds of depression are not considered to be a disease. Depressive feelings will arise in the lives of all of us that result from traumatic events or other situations, but these are normal reactions that are not associated with a disease. Some of these sources of grief are listed in figure number 9. So figure number 9 has 5 bullets, and it's entitled Situations That Produce Normal Depressive Feelings. Number 1, loss of job. Number 2, divorce. Number 3, death of a loved one. Number 4, disappointment in love. And number 5, Blue Monday. So depressive feelings associated with these situations will ease with time as we learn to go on with life. Such depression is termed situational depression. Although many of the treatments outlined in this book will work for situational depression as well, this is not our main focus. In addition to traumatic occurrences, the list includes Blue Monday. From time to time, almost everyone will have a Blue Monday, even when it isn't Monday. On such days, energy will be at a low ebb and concentration is difficult. Comments which would ordinarily be regarded as jokes may seem like insults. At times, these off days come as the result of something definite and identifiable, such as a loss of sleep from the day after the night before kind of thing. At other times, they come without warning and for no apparent reason. Fortunately, it is possible to prevent at least most of the down days, as Chapter 5, Lifestyle Treatments for Depression, will explain. However, an occasional down mood obviously does not constitute a mental illness or disease. So I think when they said from the day after the night before kind of thing just means we stayed up all night or had poor sleep or something along those lines. So new heading, symptoms of depression. What then are the symptoms of the disease of major depression? Is complicated medical testing required? We will see that it often does not require formal testing to make a diagnosis of depression, nor does it require a physician or a psychologist, although either or both might be helpful in confirming the disease, they certainly would be helpful in the attempt to find the cause and most effective treatment. Some people have problems calling depression a disease, since it may be knowingly or unknowingly self-induced. But labeling a condition a disease does not take away responsibility of the person involved. For instance, coronary artery disease, the number one cause of heart disease and premature death in America, is often self-induced by a pattern of high cholesterol eating habits and/or cigarette smoking, yet it is still a disease that can cause death. The same is true for depression. Listing it as a disease does not necessarily mean that it is not self-induced. There are 9 symptoms associated with the disease of major depression, as listed in Figure 10. In the absence of emotional trauma, a diagnosis of depression can be made by determining how many of the following symptoms an individual has. So, how many of the following symptoms an individual has. So, a person who experiences at least 5 of the 9 symptoms for at least 2 weeks has clinically defined major depression. A person who experiences 2 to 4 of the 9 symptoms for at least 2 weeks has a clinically defined mild form of depression called subsyndromal depression. So it is depression, but it's just milder. But if they have at least 5 of the 9, then it's major depression. A person with the disease of major depression will rarely have all 9. However, I have seen some patients who do have them all. Of course, emotional trauma could produce all of the symptoms, but they would not indicate the disease of depression, as previously explained. A person with a mild form of depression called subsyndromal depression may not be suffering from a diminished quality of life. Yet the importance of diagnosing the disease should not be minimized because of the high risk of it being transformed into major depression. Let us now look at each of the 9 symptoms for major depression as outlined in Figure 10. So those outlined in Figure 10, which is entitled Symptoms of Major Depression. Number 1, deep sadness or emptiness. Number 2, apathy. Number 3, agitation or restlessness. Number 4, sleep disturbance. Number 5, weight or appetite disturbances. Number 6, lack of concentration. Number 7, feelings of excessive guilt or worthlessness. Number 8, morbid thoughts. And number 9, fatigue. So the first symptom, deep sadness, is what most people equate with feeling depressed. People qualify for this symptom if they personally acknowledge that almost every day they feel sad or empty most of the day, or if a reliable person makes a similar observation about them. For example, an observer may notice that the person in question becomes tearful without an obvious cause. Often my patients with depression will be explaining something to me in the exam room and then will lose control and begin to cry, saying that they don't know why they are crying If they feel ashamed, as they often do, I reassure them that there is nothing to be ashamed of. I have a box of facial tissues in every room and invariably hand them one and provide reassurance. Children or adolescents will qualify for this symptom even if their mood is not sad, but irritable instead. It is important to note that I often see people with depression that do not have the symptom of deep sadness, and thus will deny that they are depressed. To them, sadness equals depression, and since they don't feel sad, they think that they can't be depressed. On the other hand, it is equally important to realize that not everyone who experiences deep sadness or even crying spells is suffering from a mental disease. If they do qualify for the symptom, it will often be because of their feelings of emptiness. Also, those who do not qualify for the symptom, or symptom number two, apathy, do not have major depression, regardless of how many other symptoms they exhibit. So let me say that again. So those who do not qualify for this symptom, which is deep sadness, or symptom number two, apathy, do not have major depression, regardless of how many other symptoms they exhibit. So you have to have at least one of those two. Apathy is described by a markedly diminished interest or pleasure in almost all activities for most of the day, nearly every day. Even doing fun things is no longer enjoyable. The motivational level of the affected person is often decreased significantly. The third symptom, agitation, is a disturbance without a definite cause, often described as restlessness. A person will also qualify for this symptom if the body's general level of activity is significantly slowed. So it could either be fast or slowed. This individual may not be aware of his slower walking pace unless he sees himself on a home video. Other unusual activities will often be significantly slowed. Other usual activities will often be significantly slowed. The fourth symptom, sleep disturbance, may vary from one person to another. Some individuals will have insomnia almost every night, while others will feel sleepy or may even be found sleeping much of the time, even during the day. These people characteristically will not want to get up in the morning, but will have to drag themselves out of bed. The fifth symptom, weight or appetite change, can also go either direction. For an established patient of mine, I will check the individual's previous weight. If a loss of or gain of 5% or more of the body weight occurs in 1 month without significant attempting a weight change, this symptom applies. It will also apply if they have a marked increase or decrease in appetite nearly every day. Children will qualify if they fail to undergo expected weight gains with time. So again, just remember that it's usually going to be weight gain, but it could be weight loss. Weight loss or weight gain of 5% or more. So it has to be at least 5% in a month. So in 30 days, 5% weight gain or loss in 1 month. Again, if they're not trying to lose weight. If they're trying to lose weight or gain weight, then that doesn't count. All right. The sixth symptom, lack of concentration, is most notable in students or brain workers. Those who have difficulty in making decisions or say that clear thinking is difficult nearly every day will also qualify for this symptom. The seventh symptom of feelings of worthlessness makes a person feel that he is of no use to any other person on almost a daily basis. Excessive or inappropriate guilt would also qualify him for this symptom. Merely self-reproach or guilt about being sick does not qualify this person for this condition. The eighth symptom, morbid thoughts, includes recurrent thoughts about death or suicide, whether or not the person has actually formed a specific plan for carrying it out. Obviously, if the person has already attempted suicide, he would qualify for this condition. The ninth and last symptom is the one I see most often in my practice, per Dr. Nedley, fatigue or lack of energy nearly every day. Wow. Many people come to me with this complaint. I usually ask questions about the other symptoms to see if depression could be the underlying cause. Although most of the patients with fatigue do not have depression as the cause, many do. For those who do, I take the approach described in Chapter 3 to find the real cause of their depression as I compile a profile of their condition. It often takes some time convincing that they have depression if they have the symptom of fatigue, but are not experiencing the symptom of deep sadness. This realization must occur if a lasting treatment program is to be followed by the patient. It is the important first step to initiate a lasting treatment to reach the goal of a lasting cure. A more detailed explanation of major depression symptoms is found in Appendix 3. For those who may be interested in the symptoms of another mild form of depression called dysthymic disorder, you will find them in Appendix 4. And then there is a figure, figure 11, and it's entitled Abraham Lincoln's Depression. And this is his quote. Abraham Lincoln, in quotes, "I am now the most miserable man living. If what I feel were equally distributed to the whole human family, there would be not one cheerful face on earth. Whether I shall ever be better, I cannot tell. I awfully and fearfully forebode and predict that I shall not get better. To remain as I am is impossible. I must die or be better, it appears to me." Wow, that's rough. All right, and the conclusion of this chapter is, "The human brain is a marvelous organ in structure and function. Its amazing intercommunications linking electrical and chemical signals have been the subject of ongoing studies by scientists and physicians ad infinitum. However, like any other organ of the body, it can have malfunctions that afflict people in every walk of life in the U.S. and around the earth. Depression is one of these maladies. The percentage of the U.S. population afflicted by depression is at an all-time high and continues to increase. The increase is much greater among the 15 to 25-year-old age group. Such disorders may be an embarrassment to the victims that results in a denial or cover-up of the disease, and thus the victims go untreated. The good news is that recent discoveries in the diagnosis and treatment of depression have markedly increased the opportunity for recovery. These new lines of attack are a departure from the customary medicines in common use today for treating this disease. The approach has proven to be very beneficial to my patients, which should be an encouragement to all who are suffering from depression and who know someone who is, or who know someone who is. This book is committed to spelling out the workings of this unique method of treatment." And again, focuses on the cause. Let me read through that real quick again. It's just three paragraphs. So conclusion, "The human brain is a marvelous organ in structure and function. Its amazing intercommunications linking electrical and chemical signals have been the subject of ongoing studies by scientists and physicians ad infinitum. However, like any other organ of the body, it can have malfunctions that afflict people in every walk of life in the U.S. and around the earth. Depression is one of these maladies." So paragraph number two, "The percentage of the U.S. population afflicted by depression is at an all-time high and continues to increase. The increase is much greater among 15 to 25-year-old age group. Such disorders may be an embarrassment to the victims that results in a denial or cover-up of the disease, and thus the victims go untreated." And the last paragraph, paragraph number three, "The good news is that recent discoveries in the diagnosis and treatment of depression have markedly increased the opportunity for recovery." Hallelujah. "These new lines of attack are a departure from the customary medicines in common use today for treating this disease. The approach has proven to be very beneficial to my patients, which should be an encouragement to all who are suffering from depression and who know someone who has depression. This book is committed to spelling out the workings of this unique method of treatment." All right. Thank you. God bless you. Muchas gracias. Dios te bendiga. And just means something like God go with you. What's that other statement? Something like bendicioni, something like that. Blessings. So God bless you guys, and keep moving forward. Some good stuff. All right, bye. That is the first chapter of Depression, The Way Out by Dr. Neil Nedley. And again, the title of that chapter is The Marvelous Mind and the Invisible Disease. Thank you.